Drug Truth Network. This is Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth about the drug war. My name is Dean Becker. Steve Nolan is our engineer. And tonight we have a very special program for you. We have visiting us from Santa Cruz, California, Council Member Emily Riley, who's been here to talk to our city council. We'll also hear a few words from our illustrious drug czar, John Walters. But first up, Poppygate. Poppygate, bizarre news about the U.S. policy on controlling heroin, featuring Glenn Greenway.
According to White House figures released last November, Afghani opium production is now 36 times higher than before the U.S. invasion in 2001. President Bush told a crowd of campaign supporters on Friday that Afghanistan is a rising democracy. The same day, Yvonne Ridley, a British journalist who was once held captive by the Taliban, stated that the only success story coming out of Afghanistan today is the drugs industry. The country is now the world's top heroin producer. Also on Friday, the UK Foreign Affairs Committee on International Terrorism said, regarding Poppygate, that there is little, if any, sign of the war on drugs being won and every indication that the situation is likely to deteriorate. Sadly, last Tuesday, the courageous and Nobel-winning aid group Doctors Without Borders announced plans to leave Afghanistan after 24 years, citing the lack of security. This is Glenn Greenway reporting for the Drug Truth Network.
And my friends, with that, I think it's time to begin our program here. And again, I want to let you know we have in studio Emily Riley. She's a city councilwoman from the city of Santa Cruz, California, and she's with us for this approximate 24-hour time frame. She had a workshop with us last night at the Unitarian Church, met with a reporter or two along the way, spoke to our Houston City Council, and she's with us here tonight on Cultural Baggage. Welcome, Emily.
Thank you, Dean. I'm happy to be here.
Yes, ma'am. There is so much that you guys have done out in California and in Santa Cruz, San Francisco, to preserve freedom, if you ask me. I mean, in many ways you guys have stood for American values, and medical marijuana being one of them.
Well, medical marijuana certainly is one of the most important ones, I'd say. But Santa Cruz is a very special place in that way. We have a group of citizens who are obsessed with information, who want the truth and do everything they can to seek it out and to hold our feet to the fire.
Sure. And that's as it should be.
Mm-hmm.
That's true democracy.
Yeah.
I want to read something here right quick. 33 years ago, Richard Nixon declared war on illegal drugs and called drug abuse public enemy number one in the United States. And to this day, just last week here in Houston, John Walters was here saying that marijuana was twice the threat of heroin. You know, how can we hold these federal officials' feet to the fire? What can we do here in Texas?
Well, I think, you know, this isn't the answer that everybody wants, I don't think. I think we all want that magic bullet, you know, the one thing that if we do it, it's going to make it okay and it's going to turn it around tomorrow.
Yeah.
But the fact is, it isn't going to turn around tomorrow, but it is changing. And the most important thing that we can all do is, first of all, seek out personal peace and then begin to put ourselves, because we've sort of are at that place personally, I think we find ourselves then putting ourselves in the company of like minds, and then you begin to create a kind of network where things begin to weave together, and at some point that growth reaches a place where things will tip the other way. But it has to come from the bottom up that way. It's clearly not going to come from the top down.
Now, I know you're friends with Mike and Valerie Corral.
Yeah, I sure am.
Two heroes in my book, certainly.
Absolutely.
And I was wondering if you'd tell us a little quick summary of that story.
Well, I've known Mike and Val for a long time. And right around, I guess, the end of the 80s, early 90s, I ran into Val one day where she had once again been cited for growing medicine for her patients and friends that she was helping, and herself, and was once again cited, and this time it happened in front of her niece. And she said, "You know, I'm just tired of this. I'm not going to put up with it anymore." And that really began, in my mind, that was the day when things really began to change for Mike and Val. Their lives are certainly very different now than they were then. They were living in a very quiet place that was very, very zen-like, sort of like visiting a Buddhist monastery. It was so quiet and wonderful.
Right.
And since that time, she, of course, has gotten much more active and engaged in changing laws. And, of course, since that time, now we have had medicinal marijuana reform laws passed in at the state and county and local level in the state of California, as have several other states, although, unfortunately, Texas isn't one of them.
No, not yet. We're working on it. And I want to talk about a little aspect. You've heard me talk many times on the air about Project Eustredam and how our goal is to open the dialogue with our city council here in Houston, as I'm hoping the other shows, the other folks out there in the other cities on the network are doing as well. You got to start local and push it upwards, is my guess on how this might work best in the state of Texas. We had the district attorney of Harris County, the city of Houston, and he said something the other day that I think that we all should give a listen to here, because it's something we all might think about making the change possible here in Houston.
If people in Texas decide that they don't want to make the use of marijuana against the law, that's fine with me. It doesn't hurt my feelings at all.
Now, that's Chuck Rosenthal, the man who sends more people to prison for drugs than anybody sends to prison for anything anywhere else in the world, including Red China, Russia, North Korea. So he, in essence, from what I'm reading there, wouldn't mind at all if we got rid of these crazy laws against marijuana. It's really up to us to be the groundswell, the write those letters, make those phone calls, get involved. Become a citizen. Be part of that democracy we were talking about a minute ago. Emily, I understand that, you know, not just in regards to medical marijuana. We were talking about freedoms, maintenance of American values. And let's talk for just a second before we go to break here. I understand you guys were the first city in the nation to vote against this war. No bombing.
Yeah, we sure were. That was a very proud moment for us, I would say, and especially since we knew that we were really just voicing the sentiments that were shared among many, 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 many Americans and people of other American cities, and that effort ended up with 153 cities in this country passing similar resolutions and the creation of Cities for Peace, and then beyond that, Mayors for Peace as well.
If I recall, last night you mentioned Chicago being one.
Yes, Chicago
and,
was one.
Some major
New York,
cities,
Atlanta,
joining.
Big cities, yeah.
Atlanta, yes, yeah. Okay. And then the other one we spoke of, you guys, as best you could, voted against the Patriot Act as was permitted by your
our city charter. Yeah, we didn't pass a resolution giving direction to our police to not follow the Patriot Act, because our charter doesn't allow us to give direction to city staff at all. We can only give direction to the city manager. But what we did do was express our great concern about obviously, all of our rights and freedoms that are being compromised by the Patriot Act, and also pointed out the places where the U.S. Constitution is being stepped on by the Patriot Act as well, which is a really important thing to remember, I think. And we were also so concerned about the fact that because of the Patriot Act, our local libraries were required to give any lists of any books that any of us borrowed should they be asked by the feds. The head of our library, Ann Turner, wonderful woman, published notices inside all the libraries in Santa Cruz saying that we will be shredding all of the records every night of who borrowed what. So that was pretty wonderful too.
That's fantastic. I wanted to ask you, across the nation, there's all these, you know, attempts to educate our children about drugs. Many of them go under the name of DARE, which has been kind of discredited along the way and is disappearing in some locales. And I'm wondering, in an enlightened city like Santa Cruz, how is that handled there within the school system somewhere?
Well, in Santa Cruz, we have community policing, and we also have the school resource officer, who is a police officer as well. And I think it's much more important to answer the questions children have and listen to them rather than to try to teach them anything. And if whenever I have an opportunity to be around kids, I just try to find out what they're thinking about and what they're wondering about and what they care about and what they're afraid of. Because in a culture where we're taught over and over and over again to be good little consumers and to kind of toe the line and not ask too many questions, I think that kids begin to look at some of the things they're told about some drugs, and when they find out that they weren't exactly told the truth, then they sort of wonder if, well, maybe all of the dangers of drugs that they've been told aren't true either, which is not really very healthy.
Now, John Walters came to the city of Houston last week. Has he come to the city of Santa Cruz?
I don't think so.
I don't think he'd dare, but I just wondered. Okay. I know when he went to San Francisco, he practically got booed off the stage, and that's when he started carrying around about 14 security agents for protection, I suppose. I'll tell you what, Steve, let's go ahead and take our break right now. I have a question I want to ask you when we come back in regards to this Supreme Court case. All right?
Uh-huh.
Okay, thank you.
You'll see that 94 million, almost 95 million Americans have ever used marijuana in their lifetime, ages 12 and above.
It's time to play Name That Drug by Its Side Effects.
Blurred vision, cold sweats, fast heartbeat, nausea, nervousness, shakiness, faintness, slurred speech, confusion, diseases of the adrenal, pituitary, and thyroid gland, or kidney and liver disease, and death. Time's up. The answer, insulin, another FDA-approved product. Drug czar of the Americas, John Walters.
High-potency marijuana ought not to be considered as a marijuana was in the past. It ought to be considered another new drug.
To learn the truth about this matter, I urge you to visit the website of the Marijuana Policy Project at mpp.org.
Redneck Uncle Bubba, Aunt Marthy in the sticks, Grandpa the Inquisitor, Little Bubba, couldn't they really, really use a cultural baggage CD? Are you brave enough to send it?
Please visit drugtruth.net. Our guest next week, two internationally known pain doctors. First up, you'll hear Dr. Joel Hochman.
I think that if heroin were legal, if all drugs were not illegal, I think the incidence of addiction would be the same it's been for the last 100 years. And I think that this whole thing is just a passage, a mythology.
Dr. Stratton Hill.
What about the use of opioids or narcotics for non-cancer pain? Should they be used? Well, to me, of course they should be used.
Of course.
But that it's the only situation I know where death is part of the treatment plan.
American medical practitioners, I don't know. Death and pain are good. You know, I can't quite understand what the deal is on this. Now, when we went to break, I was asking Emily, and I want to reiterate our guest is Emily Riley, a city councilwoman for the city of Santa Cruz, California, and she's here in Houston to help us understand what we can do to help. And let's first talk about the case headed to the Supreme Court. Tell us what's going on.
Okay, well, both the city of Santa Cruz and the county of Santa Cruz have joined the members of WHAM, and specifically Mike and Valerie Correll, in the suit against versus John Ashcroft, basically, is what it says at the top of the papers, because of the what we consider to be the illegal raid of the garden where the medicinal marijuana is grown for the group, the Women's Alliance for Medicinal Marijuana in Santa Cruz. And that garden was raided 2 years ago.
Yeah.
2 years ago,
right.
This fall, so almost 2 years ago, and the medicine was taken, and Mike and Valerie were taken. They were arrested, but not charged with anything and not held and were released. And because the way this particular group works, they raise their own plants, they harvest them, they make the medicine themselves, they disperse it to their members. No money changes hands. They don't sell it. It doesn't cross state lines. So the fact that this was brought under the Interstate Commerce Act isn't really appropriate. And so I believe, clearly I'm not a lawyer, but the Ninth District Court of Santa Cruz or of California upheld their position, and so now it will be going to the Supreme Court along with a couple of other cases from California as well, where, as you know, we have passed an initiative allowing the use of medical marijuana for people upon the recommendation of their physicians. And it's something that passed by a very clear major supermajority, more than two-thirds of the people of the state. And in Santa Cruz, the city of Santa Cruz, it was 74% of the people voted for it.
As I recall, it got more votes than Clinton.
I've heard that as well.
Okay, now, let's get back more to the reason why you came to this hellhole city of Houston in the middle of August here, or the beginning anyway. We went to the city council today, and I think we budged them that inch. I think we're going to make progress there. They told us to get more specific what we want. They actually asked us a question. And we're going to take them some protocols based on what you guys have done in Santa Cruz and perhaps what they've done in Oakland and other places, and present it to them along with the signatures of some very reputable people, members of this community. But what can the individuals do? How can they participate?
Well, I think it's really important for people to understand that it's never any one person that makes the difference, and that each one of us has a role to play and a contribution to make, and that when I know as a council member in Santa Cruz, and especially last year when I was mayor, I set the agendas. And so for something to make it all the way onto the agenda of a meeting, I really needed to feel that it was more than just something I was interested in, or even a few people who are kind of like minds in many ways with me. It was more when I could see something that had the support of a coalition of people who came from very different walks of life, who didn't necessarily agree on other things, but on this particular issue, they could see that it was in their best interest and in the best interest of the community as far as they saw it to move forward with this. Because that's really what city governing is all about. It's representing all of the people in the community, not just the ones who voted for you.
Right. Give us a sneak back, look back at the early days in Santa Cruz, something that might compare with our current situation here in Texas, and maybe what helped got things rolling.
Well, I know that certainly the early days in the progressive movement of Santa Cruz politics, I wasn't on the city council. I wasn't really involved very much in politics at all.
Right.
And I had kind of dropped out of the scene at the end of the 60s. And I remember in 1998, there was a very specific issue in the city that I was concerned about. And I called my mom and said, you know, I don't know whether it's even worth it getting involved in this, because I just feel like, you know, nobody listens and nobody cares and I don't have any power. And I feel kind of cynical and sort of alienated, and I don't know whether to get back involved the way I used to be or not. And my mother said, Emily, Bobby Kennedy has been dead for 30 years. Get over it. And I did, you know, and I started working on this specific issue, which had to do with a road project that was happening in the city, where everyone said, you are never going to get the State Department of Transportation to listen to you. This is a state highway. But we did, in fact, find that although we didn't get everything we wanted, we were able to effect some change. We saved some trees. We saved some money. We made the streets safer for the kids who needed to cross it to go to school. We did several things along the way that really protected the character of the neighborhood that we were trying to protect. And And it really showed all of us that we could make change. And the council listened to us only when we went to them with business people as well as people who were workers, part of the workforce, people who were kids, people who were parents. When we got that broad base of support, that's when they began to listen. And I think that's what's going to happen within your city and your state and the nation as well.
You know, I noticed some, this was about 3 weeks ago, some news came out that showed Texas was leading the nation in the incarceration of its people, but following right behind was California.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen many news stories about the prison guards basically running many aspects of your government, that they're averaging $75,000 and $80,000 a year for doing that type work. Does Santa Cruz send a lot of people to prison? Houston sure does.
Well, not as many people. I would say, based on the kind of community policing we do, and based on the sort of, we have judges who will send people to recovery programs instead of sending them to prison. But for sure, building of prisons is the biggest growth industry in California right now. It's really despicable, scary stuff.
Well, even though we lead the way, our state representative John Whitmire announced a couple of weeks back that at our current rate, we will have to fund the building of more prisons here in Texas next year.
Yeah.
And we all know it's because the drug war is the big vacuum cleaner.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Emily, I tell you what, let's take this quick break and we'll be right back.
When you look at the problem and deal with young people seriously, and you look at the pathways to dependency and abuse, we cannot rest with the old view that marijuana is somehow a gateway. It's a dead end for increasing percentages of teenagers today based on the kind of product it is today. In addition, it is a factor because these users are not 17, 16, 18, 19. The average age of first use of marijuana today in many communities, and the average nationally, is 13, 14, and many it's 12, 11, and 10. It's not just a gateway. It's a dead end.
Now, I've heard of studies done in California that show following the implementation of these medical marijuana laws and, you know, the mechanism of controlling the distribution to the patients, that there was no increase in children's use of marijuana.
I believe that's true. I haven't seen anything that suggested that anything other than that is true. And I think it's what people discover when they begin to look into it a little bit is that medicinal marijuana has nothing to do with the recreational use of drugs. It's just not the same thing. It's apples and oranges. And putting a program together that allows people who are sick and dying and in pain and in the most need of relief some way of getting that relief, when all of the other ways don't work, when all of the prescribed medication isn't working for them, it's making them sick, it's making them unable to think and unable to function, giving them something that instead allows them to be able to actually function in the world and lead meaningful lives, it's just an amazing experience to see the way people turn around when they realize that. And that's why many of the testimonies that we've had at City Council that have meant the most are from patients themselves or caregivers who show great courage by coming and standing up even before these the initiatives were passed and saying, I have seen this work in the people I take care of. I have seen it make them parents who can again engage with their children and participate in their lives.
Now, it's been your experience to see people partake of these medicines that they mix into tinctures and cookies and other food products, and in some cases to smoke in a vaporizer or otherwise. Have you seen any health complications from any of these people? I mean, have there been problems?
Not personally, no. In fact, I haven't seen people get high either.
Right.
It's not what it's about. It's not about getting high.
They want to just reach a level to negate the pain and live their lives.
Right.
Yes. I tell you what, we've got just a couple of minutes left, and I want to really just tell the listeners out there that Emily Riley is the real deal. She came here during her vacation. She has family in California, but she understands that it's necessary to make the change, not just in California, not just in Texas even, but that we all begin to understand that we're all the same, that we all deserve respect, and that the marijuana laws have nothing to do with freedom or saving the children. Emily, I want to ask you one last thought here, and that is, they say marijuana is a gateway drug, and that's the target of President Bush's anti-drug campaign. But you and I both know this. That's just not logical, you know, to do this. It makes no sense. It makes a lot of money for certain people. But here in Houston, you know, we're doing baby steps. And your best advice, you know, to the listener on what they can do.
Well, I really do think, Dean, that we need to always come from a place of compassion. And that means compassion for the people who are sick, and that means compassion for the people who don't understand that medicinal marijuana is, in fact, a useful drug. And so that's hard, you know, having compassion for the people who disagree with us about the value of this. But that's really where it has to begin. And, I mean, the reason I came today was because, although I have no idea how things are going to change, I know they are changing. And I know that if we want to affect that change, we have to show up. So everyone who's listening will be given some opportunity soon. Something will show up in their lives when they're able to say yes instead of no, and they will. And that's what's going to make the change. We have to do it together.
Strong advice. And I hope you're listening, friends out there. It is truly as simple as spending 10 minutes in front of your computer writing a little letter that sums up what your observation about this drug war, and maybe a small recommendation of change that you would recommend, and then emailing it, sending it to your congressman, state and federal, send a copy to the local paper, and keep a copy in your pocket to share with people you meet along the way for your reasons and why you believe what you believe. The evidence is out there. There's websites all over the net that contain the truth. These government doctors and scientists are paid to say what they pay. And, you know, these independents in other countries and here in the U.S. are telling you the truth. Nobody's died from using opium under a doctor's guidance in the last year. And the doctors that we're having on next week say 17,000 people die every year from Tylenol and ibuprofen and aspirin. So it's really up to you to take care. And because of drug prohibition, you don't know what's in that bag you just bought. So please, be careful.
For the Drug Truth Network, and on behalf of my technical producer, Steve Nolan, this is Dean Becker for Cultural Baggage, the Unvarnished Truth. This show is produced at the Pacifica Studios of KPFT, Houston.
Tap dancing on the edge of an abyss.